5 minutes before the top of the hour, Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Senators puck drop 2 o'clock here on the station. Following us at 11 a.m., Hustler and Lawless, and then Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show will take you right up until puck drop.
Can you tell how excited I am? I'm shaking. I'm
also, you've had two coffees.
I'm almost levitating here. I am excited.
Yes.
Are you excited, Drew?
I'm equally as excited as you are, Ezzy. We have one final division to do in our season preview. Then in the next hour or so, we get heavy into the Winnipeg Jets, where we will cover them top to bottom with the specific preview related to the Jets.
Pacific Division.
The Pacific Division, which saw three teams make the playoffs last season, including the eventual Stanley Cup champion, the Los Angeles Kings. We start with the Phoenix Coyotes. They finished 11th overall in the NHL last year. They finally won a division playoff series. They defeated the Chicago Blackhawks in that six-game series there. The Coyotes, again, very much like the Nashville Predators, are a team that each year people say they're going to take a step back. Mm-hmm. This year, they lost Ray Whitney, and they seem to be trying to replicate his production with a combination of Steve Sullivan and Moss.
Traded for Matthew Lombardi, and too.
Matthew Lombardi they got for really nothing from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Fourth rounder?
A fourth rounder that becomes a conditional third rounder. Is this the year that the Coyotes do take that step backwards?
I don't really think so, Drew. I mean, again, you don't love the roster when you look at it, but they've gotten better over the course of the offseason. Zdeněk Mihajlík is a nice stay-at-home, shut-down defenseman who works better in the system that Phoenix employs than the system that Pittsburgh employs.
He played his best hockey while he was a Phoenix Coyote.
And, you know, he replaces Akoin. They're both right-handed shooting, more defensive defensemen. Akoin, offensively, has more talent, big shot and all that stuff, but Akoin can't really skate at the NHL, at a high NHL level anymore. And Mihajlík, you know, is not the fastest player in the league, but he's moves around, I think, better than Akoin does at this stage in his career. Moss can play center and the wing. Sullivan can be a versatile player. Both he's small, like Whitney. Whitney is more reliable in terms of health every year. Whitney is a better, in my mind, offensive player. But Sullivan and Moss do add some offensive creativity there. You add Lombardi, who's as fast as he gets in the league. He's familiar with Phoenix. Taylor Payette, who they lost, is a slower skater. And Whitney isn't the fastest skater. So, in fact, I think the team has gotten faster. I mean, the team has probably gotten more talented. And the question is, you know, not the question. You know what they do. Last year, they were fifth in goals against, eighth in penalty kill in the league. And I think that's the bread. Their bread is buttered on the defensive side of the puck. So like the question is can Mike Smith keep it up? And with Sean Burke mentoring him and Dave Tippett, probably the best coach in the league, I don't see any reason. I don't see how you can be confident picking against them.
I'm going to do it. And by the way, my bread is buttered with peanut butter.
And then
butter on top of that peanut butter. It's so tough to go against the Phoenix Coyotes when you're coached by Dave Tippett, who year after year is one of the best coaches. He's won Coach of the Year. He's an excellent coach. And the Phoenix Coyotes do a good job considering that they don't have an owner. and they haven't for 3 years now. I think Ray Whitney really did a good job for them last year, and I agree with Richie that they got better, and Remus knows this better than anybody. Zdeněk Mihajlík, Richie has liked before anybody, but back in Pittsburgh, and he was a key component of that team. And I agree with Richie that they've gotten better on defense. I don't necessarily know that they've gotten better on forward. They have. You look at Radim Verbata, and you know he had 38 goals last year or whatever it was around there, and they got a lot of production. Shane Doan was re-signed, and he's the leader of that team. I still think that the Phoenix Coyotes are a team that's overachieved, and you know they've been in the playoffs the last couple of years, but I don't know if again then they can do that, getting these career years from grinders, but. I'm going to predict them to be out of the playoffs, but again, it seemed, Drew, like you mentioned at the top, everyone predicts them always to have a step back this year, and it might not be this year, it might be next year.
The San Jose Sharks finished right behind the Phoenix Coyotes, mm-hmm. 12th in the NHL. Additions this year, pretty much very status quo. They added Brad Stewart from Detroit, and they added Adam Burrish. They lost Daniel Vinnick, and they lost John Mitchell. Tory Mitchell. Those are the subtractions off the team. You know, every year, this, you know, people say the San Jose Sharks should do better than they do in the playoffs. any reason to predict that maybe this is finally the year that the Sharks take that next step in the playoffs?
You know, I don't think so, Drew, because Thornton and Marlowe are a year older. Thornton has proved he can't do it when it's in the big time. I like Logan Couture, and I know that you like the team from top to bottom skill-wise, although Niemi doesn't always inspire confidence in the back. In between the pipes, I see an improvement from the team in the penalty killing department, and you see right there they were second last in the league last year in penalty killing.
That's right, 29th overall on the in penalty killing, second overall in power play.
Larry Robinson should go a long way. He's probably their biggest offseason addition. Mm-hmm. Should go a long way to improving that. Having said that, the issue has never been whether the Sharks are filling the categories with the top of the league. The issue is, can the Sharks win it when it matters most? I think they've missed that chance, and I don't think... I mean, the West could be up for grabs this year, I will say that. So if there's any year, this would be the kind of year to do it, but I just... When it comes down to a seven-game series, I just don't see how something's going to change after so many years of getting close but not being able to take the next step.
Yeah, Richie, we should mention, too, that Brent Burns is injured to start the season. I like bringing Brad Stewart back in, and I think, you know, their defense is very good. Dan Boyle, it's year after year, one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. Antti Niemi, I don't think, is a top goaltender in the NHL, but he gives them good enough goaltending because they're so good defensively. The San Jose Sharks are a team that has the puck, again, like the Detroit Red Wings or the Edmonton Oilers are going to be a puck possession team, very good offensively. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. They finished seventh last year. I'll have them in the playoffs again this year, but again, it comes down to the same guys: Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau on the top line with Joe Pavelski, and then I know Richie mentioned Logan Couture again. I think, you know, he's an up and coming. He's the future of that team because you know Thornton and Marleau are you know both in their 30s, obviously. But I still think the San Jose Sharks are a playoff team. Again, people, you know, will look at them again and say, okay, well, what changed? What's going to separate them from making the playoffs? And again, in a shortened season, and we're going to talk about this more and more when we get into the Jets and everything, teams that didn't make that many changes are at a better advantage. The Boston Bruins, the St. Louis Blues, the LA Kings, the teams that didn't make that many changes are at a better in a better position. And San Jose is such a good veteran team that they'll make the playoffs, but I don't. Again, they might be the Buffalo Bills again this year.
Speaking of teams that didn't make any changes, the Los Angeles Kings, the Stanley Cup champions, really stood pat like no other Stanley Cup champion in recent memory.
If you're able to do it, Drew, you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they obviously won the cup last year. Their only subtraction from the team is really is Ethan Morrow.
That's probably addition by subtraction.
Yeah, honestly. So, I mean, other than that, they kept everything the same. Is it possible that the LA Kings are better this year than they were last year, given that they now get a full season out of Jeff Carter?
In the regular season, yes. I don't think they're going to repeat. Eric Duhatchik wrote about this, and we're going to have him on, as we mentioned, later on in the show.
10:30 this morning.
There's so much parity, and there's not been a duplicate winner since the last lockout. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins went back to the Stanley Cup Finals back-to-back. There's so much parity. It's going to be very difficult for L.A. to repeat. But the big additions that they made were at the end of last year's regular season. They brought Jeff Carter in. Mm-hmm. He gave them more offense, more size, you know, and the guys that added to Andrei Kopitar and Dustin Brown and Mike Richards, you know, those guys like Dwight King and those guys, you know, they're blessed with an amazing goaltender. They have, you know, great defense. They're a top team. I have them winning the division, and I think that, yeah, now they have no reason to make any changes. This is the team that they're going to have for the years to come.
Strong, I'll keep it short. Strong up the middle. Kopitar, Richards, Stoll, they re-signed. Carter can play the center, obviously, if they want him to. Big defenseman in Doughty, great goaltending. Every team would love to be as strong up the middle as the Los Angeles Kings are. I don't see any reason why. Remember, Sutter made them better at the end of last year.
Right.
I don't see any reason why they don't continue.
The Dallas Stars finished 18th overall in the NHL last year, just out of the playoffs. Very busy offseason. They acquired Derek Roy from Buffalo. They signed Ray Whitney and Jaromir Jagr. They acquired Aaron Rome. They subtracted Mike Ribeiro from the list. Steve Ott from the team. Sheldon Surrey, Adam Pardy, Adam Burrish. You can also add Cody Eakin as one of their additions.
Former guest of the show.
Yeah, the guy that they acquired from the Washington Capitals. Are the Dallas Stars a playoff team?
No. And I think with Jamie Benn, Richie, they wouldn't have been a playoff team. Jamie Benn's not signed.
Jamie Benn's still unsigned for the Dallas Stars. If they sign him, if they get him under contract pretty quickly, does that change your opinion at all?
No. I think Drew Yager and Whitney, even though those guys in their late 30s, early 40s, had good years last year, even though Yager disappeared in the playoffs, mm-hmm. I think that was to sell tickets. I don't think that those guys are going to make you better. Derek Roy makes you better. I like that trade at the center position. Derek Roy will be their top-line center to start the season. Egg is a good player. I don't think they have enough talent offensively. Strong in net, strong in goal, same defense tandem as last year with Goligoski, Robida. You've got Trevor Daly there. I just don't think they have enough offensive power, especially without Ben.
I think they do make the playoffs. I think you look at what they lacked last year. Where were they in the power play? Last in the league. Where they for goals for? 22nd. What have they added? Roy, talent, and he's come back earlier than expected. Whitney, Yager. Yager faded as Yager can't skate like he used to, and it doesn't give him the room that he used to have, and he's not the player he once was. But he sure did a nice job with Claude Giroux last year, and I think he'll probably do a nice job once Jamie Benn is signed. You look at their top two lines, if Ben signed, Ben Eriksson, Yager, Whitney, Roy, and Ryder, with a really good, talented goaltender in Kari Lehtinen, and a defense that can move the puck and skate a bit, and you've gotten faster getting rid of Surrey and Party. I know Surrey didn't always play it, but I like this Dallas squad. I think they have a pretty nice vision, and I think they make the playoffs.
The Anaheim Ducks finished 26th in the NHL last year. Any reason why you see an improvement from the Ducks?
Can't be any worse. That's why you see an improvement, because Getzlaff and Perry last year were both not as good as they can be. So that's where you see an improvement. What they've added, slower defensemen at the back end, but guys who can...
Added size,
exactly. So Allen and Surrey and all that. I mean, they're slower defensemen, no doubt about it. But this team is going to be, hoping Hiller has a better year. I don't see him as a playoff team, but I do see him as a little bit more competitive than they were last year.
Yeah, they'll be better, not a playoff team, Richie. I think they're going to pair Brian Allen with Cam Fowler. Cam Fowler is a great defenseman, very young, but, they're not going to make the playoffs. Biggest thing is, are you going to trade one or both of Getzlaff and Perry? This year's version, as Eric Duhatchik wrote about, of Parise and Suter, mm-hmm. because both those guys are UFAs, and they both turned down contract offers. So that's the story for me, and Anaheim, not a playoff team.
Let's go to break. Sorry, Richie, real quick.
They also got rid of Fistrich, on the back end. Again, that guy, not a great skater. So clearly Dallas wants to improve their skating ability in the back end.
Okay. Well, let's go to break. When we come back, we do our Western Conference playoff teams, and we predict who's going to represent the West in the Stanley Cup Finals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have done every division in the NHL. We did the Eastern Conference earlier. We finished the Western Conference. Now it's time for our Western Conference playoff teams. And then coming up next segment, we go heavy on the Winnipeg Jets for the next hour or so. Gentlemen, let's start with your Central Division winners. Ezra, I'll start with you.
If you were listening to the show earlier, you know that Richie and I differ big time on this, but I've got the Chicago Blackhawks winning the Central Division over the St. Louis Blues.
Okay.
I'm very high on them, and I think a healthy Taves, healthy Hossa is going to make the difference.
Richard Pollock, your Central Division winner.
St. Louis Blues.
I will mimic you and go with the St. Louis Blues as well. Northwest Division winner. Let's start with Ezra Ginsberg again.
In the Northwest Division, I can't not pick the Vancouver Canucks.
Okay.
Even though I have major question marks, as do Mike Gillis probably and Alain Vigneault right now.
Sure.
But I'm going to pick the Vancouver Canucks to win the Northwest for, what, the sixth, seventh year in a row?
Yeah, something like that. Richie?
This one I'm going back and forth on. I'm thinking Vancouver logically. For some reason, I'm going to pick Edmonton. I think that. I know people say, they can't do it.
Changing your mind.
Yeah, they can't do it defensively, this and that. You know what? They can move the puck enough, I think, defensively, and they can get any time of goaltending. They're going to be putting a lot of pressure on teams with their speed and enthusiasm. And it's a short season. Who knows? Why not?
And I'm going to say it's going to be the Minnesota Wild. I think that their additions are just going to sort of propel them over the top, especially with IC Vancouver falling down significantly given their injuries and everything else. Pacific Division winners?
I'll take Manta Teo. I was just watching him on SportsCenter.
It's a fake pick or a real pick?
Unlike him, I'll make my pick authentic. I'm going to take the LA Kings to win the division, not the San Jose Sharks, who have won the division for many years, even though Phoenix won it last year. I think Phoenix will miss the playoffs, as I mentioned, but I'm going to take the LA Kings a full year with the roster that won them the Stanley Cup this year. I think it's too good not to win that division.
Richard?
Yeah, LA Kings, you know, just a quick explanation is one thing is you deal with is the hangover, but there's no hangover here. Yeah.
No, I have a hangover from last night. But.
It's been too many months. I'm going to we'll sweep that with the LA Kings as well. Now we need your next five playoff teams. Obviously, we've got our division winners. Who are your next five playoff teams? Richard, I'm going to start with you.
Detroit. Phoenix.
Yeah. Okay. You still got Phoenix making it?
Yep.
Okay.
Detroit and Phoenix. Dallas.
Yeah.
Vancouver.
Yeah.
And the other one is one that, you know, this is the one I'm not exactly sure. You know, I don't think Chicago makes that. San Jose would be the other team.
San Jose?
Yeah.
So you have Nashville and Chicago is not making it this year. Sorry, you wrote down Nashville. You meant San Jose.
Yep.
Okay. So you have those are the two. So your playoff team additions are the Oilers, the Stars. The Oilers and the Stars, pardon me, and the teams that you drop out of the playoffs are the Predators and the Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
Ezzy?
I agree with Richie on the Oilers making the playoffs, but not with the other two teams. I'm going to go with, in the Northwest Division, I've got Vancouver and Edmonton making the playoffs.
Okay.
In the Central Division, I've got Chicago, Detroit, and St. Louis making the playoffs. In the Pacific Division, okay. I've got L.A., San Jose. I'm missing a team here. Is that seven? That's seven.
You just picked 12 teams.
No, I picked seven, right? Correct? In the Pacific Division, LA and San Jose.
Okay.
I've already said that I'm not picking Anaheim to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I'm missing a team here.
No, I think you're not. So you have Chicago and you have St. Louis and Detroit.
I have seven
Central.
Or eight.
Let's go through this. You have Chicago winning the division, right?
Yes.
You have Detroit and St. Louis as well. You have L.A. and San Jose out of the Pacific.
Yep.
You have Vancouver, and do you have Edmonton out of the Northwest?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you need one more team.
Yep.
Who am I missing here?
You can obviously
be Dallas, Phoenix. It can be anybody you want.
No, I don't have either of those teams.
You have Detroit. You have Detroit already. You have Nashville. You have St. Louis. You already have St. Louis written down.
I'll Nashville. That's the team I was going to see. Nashville.
Okay. And I will wrap this up. I have Detroit, obviously, making the playoffs. I have the Blackhawks making the playoffs as well. I do not have Vancouver making the playoffs. I figure I might as well double down again. But I do have San Jose making the playoffs. And I do think I have Nashville making it, even though, you know, somehow smoke and mirrors are going to do it again. And I think, finally, the last team I have making the playoffs is going to be the Edmonton Oilers.
Well, guys, it's funny. We joke about missing, you know, not picking that last team, but it's not as if, you know, this is early October and we have a full summer to prepare for this. I mean, look at the Jets. I know we're just starting, you know, in the next hour are really our Jets coverage. But
no, next segment.
Next segment, pardon me. But they're making moves up until yesterday claiming James Wright off waivers. So, I mean, teams are making so many moves now because, what, they've had 7 days to put together an NHL team?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be tough. Again, parity in the NHL, 48-game season, I think there's going to be even more parity.
Who's your Stanley Cup representative out of the Western Conference?
I'm taking Chicago. And, again, Richie, you know, isn't as high on them. But I like the Blackhawks, and I think that they will trade for another goalie. Corey Crawford and Ray Emery aren't good enough, but I think that they will try to acquire a goaltender. And when they do acquire a goaltender, I think that is going to propel them back to being an elite team.
Richard?
St. Louis Blues.
St. Louis Blues, and I am going to go with the Los Angeles Kings. I figure, they don't have any holes, and they seem to be as good as they were last year, so you might as well stick with what, no reason to change your mind on that case. Let's go to break. When we come back, we shift our focus strictly to the Winnipeg Jets. We spend the next hour plus talking about the Winnipeg Jets, their team, their forwards, their defensemen, their goaltenders, and, of course, a preview of the Jets-Sens game with James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets Game Day. We're live on TSN 1290 with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of an amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. One more time, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. You can also find him online at davidjohncarr.com.
Drew, is it true that I saw an AP report on the wire here that you're appearing on Oprah on Monday to talk about taking illegal voice lessons?
No, that's not the case. I don't have to admit to that. I did not use steroids in the preparation for this program.
But apparently Drew's only going to allow Oprah to ask 102 questions, not 112 questions. He had to vet 10 of those questions out.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Not, by the way, Lance Armstrong couldn't look more insincere if he tried.
I can't argue with that analysis. Ezzy's cycling show will get debut on the program later on this year, apparently.
Tour de farce.
I still haven't taken the training wheels off.
Yeah, we know that. Let's start Winnipeg Jets for the next real, almost the rest of the program, really. Let's start with the Jets forward line.
Yes.
That is obviously, I mean, it's such a bizarre, like you mentioned just before the break there, it's such a bizarre sort of lead up to today's game at 2 o'clock against the Sens, in that the training camp was so abbreviated, just the week-long training camp. The Jets were airlifting players into the to join the roster off of waivers, you know, as early or as late as yesterday. You know, forward line, pick, tell me one forward. Who is the one forward on this team that is the key to the Jets' success?
Ooh, one forward. I think it's Evander Kane. He's the best forward. It looks like he's going to play with Olli Jokinen, and it looks like Claude Noel is going to stick with the Andrew Ladd, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little line. But, you know, Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com was at practice, every practice this week except yesterday, and I was asking him for updates, you know, what's going on. Training camp, it wasn't training camp, Drew, it was five practices. You can't call that 5 days a training camp. Obviously, you know, it was, but It's unbelievable. And, you know, I wrote my game day preview, which is up on the site, illegalcurve.com right now. But I was predicting the forward lines, and I was talking to Dave, and I was saying, you know, are these going to be the lines? Scheifele looks like he's going to start with Thorburn and Slater, but I wasn't sure. He might start with Burmistrov and Ponikarovsky.
Let me interrupt you there for a second. If it is Thorburn, Slater, and Scheifele, what do you think about that line? Because to me, that line is sort of a bizarre combination.
It is a bizarre combination. I want to get Richie in here, too, though, because he's much more astute than I am. But the reason why they picked up Anthony Peluso is to replace Tanner Glass. And you can call it the PST line, as some people are calling it. But that's going to be your fourth line, tough line. And Jim Slater has the ability to play third line center, and I think he should play third line center. But Mark Scheifele, it looks like they're going to put him on that line, and he's going to kind of, you know, be that offensive guy on that line. But moving forward, they obviously don't want him to be on that line.
So why do you start him there? Why Scheifele with Thorburn and Slater and not Scheifele on the right side with Kane and Jokinen?
It's a fair question, Drew, and you don't know how that'll be. You know, throughout the game, these things change all the time. It's quite fluid. But I'm going to get back to your first point first, then I want to get to Scheifele.
Okay.
The key forward to the Jets season is Olli Jokinen, in my opinion. And that's because last year you had your Ladd, Little, Wheeler line. I think you know what you got. They've split them up for a bit, and I still think they could possibly succeed if they were to split them up again. I still have some belief that a line like Little, Wheeler, and Kane could do some damage and did some damage when they were playing together in the past. In any event, Olli Jokinen is a guy you brought in to solidify your top six and hold over that spot until Mark Scheifele proved capable and ready of doing so. But last year, you have to be able to score. And we talked about this at the beginning of the show, and I'm sure people have just gotten up since then. You're going to have an issue with Bogosian's injury. You're going to have an issue defending. Can you score? Can you create offense? Jokinen last year liked, you know, he relied on Iginla a lot. He's not the best passer. He's more of a straight-ahead guy. He's more of a shooter. Can him and Kane click? Jokinen's ability to create offense for himself and for his teammates is going to be critical to whether or not the Jets make the playoffs this year. In terms of Scheifele, you know, the line combinations have kind of been very, very murky in terms of where he's playing and what he's doing. If it happens to be that he plays on that line in the interim,
the line with Thorburn and Slater,
there's two things that don't make sense. One, Thorburn's right winger, so who's playing the left side?
It sounds like, I don't know. I shouldn't say anything. Okay. That was the question that I had, is who's playing the right side there? Because when Scheifele has moved to the wing, he's been moved to the right wing.
Yes. So it makes sense in that case. I mean, and the question is, where does James Wright fit in?
Right. James Wright, who they acquired off of waivers yesterday, had been playing down in San Antonio, I believe, for the Rampage.
Yeah, so we don't know what's going to happen with that. But Scheifele's going to, I mean, I don't think he stays up. I don't think based on anything he does, he stays up, in my personal opinion.
Meaning you think that he gets sent down back to Barry after the five-game tryout.
Make a run, try and win the Memorial Cup, and then come back next year, see what you can do, and you've matured even further. They're trying to get Scheifele just a few games here to see what it's like to play against men.
Yep, like they did last year.
So one of the reasons you could say that they're not putting Scheifele up with that line is, hey, this season's so short, Drew. That, and it is, when you look at the season, it's so short that you can't waste a few games saying, hey, Scheifele, get a shot with the offensive guys. You're getting Scheifele some games, and he's not going to hurt you on the bottom lines. But you're like, Wellwood, you need to develop chemistry with Kane and Jokinen. You guys haven't played an exhibition game together. We cannot throw away games for the development of Scheifele in a 48-game season. That's what I would think would be the rationale, or one of the rationales, behind the decisions that seem to have been made for today's game.
Yeah, I think, again, I agree with you. I think Chevy and Zinger, the plan is to play Scheifele five games and then send him back. They will do it, and they should do it, because the plan with the Jets is long-term development. Develop Jacob Trouba at the University of Michigan, develop Mark Scheifele, develop Adam Lowry, all the prospects they have. And I think their prospects, I've mentioned this, are a lot better than people give them credit for. And I think the lines, I wrote a line piece for the site, and I got a lot of flack, but I don't know the lines, because there's so many moving parts. It looks like Ladd, Little, and Wheeler are going to stay together, and it looks like Kyle Wellwood is going to be on that line with Jokinen. But again, I don't think Anthony Peluso and James Wright both stay with the team. If anything, Anthony Peluso replaces Tanner Glass, and that's the winger on the fourth line. But I think the question is are you going to put Ponikarovsky with Burmistrov and Antropov, and you're going to have a scoring third line? Because last year they had a checking third line with Glass, the GST line, obviously,
and they had an AHL line for the fourth line.
And by the way, I mean, for people that are wondering, Mietinen is injured. That's why they made these pickups, because Mietinen was injured. He would have been slotted in on the third or fourth line. That's why they made the two waiver pickups.
Let's talk about this James Wright acquisition, because they acquired two guys off waivers this week, Anthony Peluso and James Wright. The question I have, are you surprised that both of those guys seem to be immediately sticking with the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I don't know if that happens, Drew. I mean, James Wright's more the guy who's a guy who will stick with the team because he can do different things. The Jets have abundance of right-wing guys, you know, guys who shoot right-handed.
Yep.
You know, so we talk about that line you're talking about with Scheifele. I mean, who plays the left side? Mietinen's another guy, right-winger. So last year you had to play a guy like Mahatchik, I believe, a couple games on the left wing, another right-handed shooting guy. Too many right-handed shooting guys and not left-wingers. In terms of Wright, he can play center and wing. He's responsible defensively.
He's big, 6'4". Not a lot in terms of he's big in height, not big in stature. He's under 200 pounds.
Defensively aware, Drew, and that's the key. And so maybe he helps him on the PK. Peluso, I don't see racking up more than a few, at most 2 to 3 games with the Jets.
He's never played in the NHL.
Yeah.
I mean, they got him from Peoria, where he was in the St. Louis Blues farm system.
He won't dress today. I would be surprised against a team like Ottawa that can fly that you're going to dress a big fighter who hasn't played and is just... Well,
or if he dresses today, and obviously we don't know that yet, if he dresses today, who sits?
Well, that's why I didn't put him in there, because the guy that I was most uncertain about, Burmy had the injury and left St. John's. The guy that I was most uncertain about was Antropov. And if they were going to put Peluso in, it would have been Antropov, but it looks like Antropov's going to play today. So that's why I agree with Richie. Peluso and Wright, I don't even know if Wright's in Winnipeg, by the way, because he was just claimed yesterday. So I don't even know if you have time to get here. But it looks like Peluso they're going to keep around. And again,
but
use as an enforcer. The guy, he's a tough guy.
We're talking
just
about
like Mike Peluso, no relation.
We're talking about guys who are fourth line guys who are going to play 4 minutes. Let's talk about the main players on the team.
Let's go to break, and we'll do that when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. Shortly past 9:30 in the morning. Welcome back. to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Looking for something to do after the Jets game tonight? The 7:45 show at Rumors is sold out, but there are tickets remaining for the 10:30 show to go see J. Chris Newberg. Still coming up at Rumors in the next month or 6 weeks, The Incredible Boris, Comedian Hypnotist. That's next week. And, of course, the big one coming up at the end of February, Rob Schneider is going to be here. Tickets have really sold out tremendously quickly for him. Some extra shows have been added for Rob Schneider. Contact Rumors, rumorscomedyclub.com, or give them a call at 204-488-4520 and see the best in stand-up comedy. Gentlemen, we were talking about the Winnipeg Jets forwards. Let's continue on along those lines. Richie, before we went to break, we talked sort of about the bottom guys, where they slot in. The top guys, are key to really make the Jets making a run this year.
Well, that's just it. I mean, you have Blake Wheeler coming into a contract year.
Mm-hmm.
Can he be more consistent than he was last year? The skill level is there. Skating ability is there. Can he maybe hold on to the puck a little less? And can he put the puck in the net a little bit more?
Let me ask you, let's talk about Blake Wheeler. Stop right there for a second. What's his ceiling? Like, I mean, did he hit his ceiling last year, or does he still have some steps to grow?
I think he can score a little more. I think he can. I think he can be better. Talent-wise, he can be better. Will he work hard enough and be consistent enough to be better? I think he has it in him. But this year will be a real big indicator, because the skill level for him has never been the question. The opportunity is now there. So this will be there for the second year, basically kind of a year at the end of the term in Atlanta when he got traded there. He's got the opportunity here. So this is a year to prove it, and he's in a contract year. What he does this year determines what he's going to be making for a long time.
If he has a good year in these abbreviated 48 games, he can make himself, he can get a long-term deal and be a Winnipeg Jet for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Richie mentioned Olli Jokinen being the key. I said Evander Kane, and then obviously I think we'd agree we might not agree on those, the number one guy, even though it's totally subjective and they're both important. Wheeler's got to be number three. Wheeler had such a surprising year. Remember the awful start that he had. He really developed not only into a good scorer, a really good playmaker. He's got the ability. Yeah. He reminds me, I'm not saying he's as good as Keith Primo, because he's not as physical. He reminds me, same size, guy that can take defensemen outside and has the ability, good vision to find his wingers or center. And Blake Wheeler is a guy, I think he'll still be around the same point range. I think bringing Olli Jokinen in will allow Kane to be better. I think Kane will have a better season. But you know what? Claude Noel is deciding to go again with Lad Little Wheeler. And even though, I wouldn't call that the number one line. I would say that Jokinen, Kane, and Wellwood would be the number one line. I think Noel, by the way, hates calling any line the number one line. I think he just has lines, Richie. I think that, if Wheeler doesn't do, produce, then they're going to be asking for other guys to produce, which I don't know if they'll be able to. Antropov, Ponikarovsky, those are guys that you hopefully slot on the third line, right? So, again, yeah, Blake Wheeler is a key cog. And ceiling, I think he could score more, like Richie said. But I don't think he's ever going to be a 100-point player. But I think, he definitely could be in the 70 to 75-point range.
That's a big step. And it'd be interesting. 64 points last year. That's 70 points is a different range for a player.
Last year was a big step. You're right.
Let me ask you guys about the power play unit for the Winnipeg Jets.
Sure.
Who's the number one power play unit? Because, last year, Evander Kane did not seem, in my opinion, he didn't see enough power play time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think that's going to change this season?
Last year, Evander Kane per game played 2.11, but the top players played a little bit more, but the difference is who he played with in the second unit.
Sure.
So, and didn't really get in those 5-on-3s a lot. I'm very interested. One of the most intriguing things to me is how the Jets set up on the power play and how they change that a bit. Because Jokinen really likes setting up on the right half boards in Calgary. And he set up a lot of his passes were cross-ice passes to a Ginla or to the cutter, meaning a defenseman cutting in down low on the opposite side of the ice, on the weak side, quote-unquote, the left side.
So Jokinen would set up on the right half boards, and he would try to feather the pass across for a one-timer, usually, to a Ginla?
One-timer, an opportunity there.
Or a cutting...
Off,
or, a cu- sorry?
or he'd come off the right half boards and shoot because he's a shooter. Mm-hmm. So he'd have the options, and he's on his off wing. The right side for a left-handed shooter is the off wing. So you have options there. The question is, how do the Jets set up? I mean, it would seem to be logical to put him with a guy like Bufflin and put Bufflin on the left side. Again, so let me explain this. Bufflin is a right-side defenseman, but on the power play, you can put him on the left side because it's an easier one-timer for him. So what would happen is maybe you use Bufflin in a similar way that you used Iginla, you know, with a guy coming in on the right-handed shot and with a good shot, and you try and see if you can stretch the ice a little bit and make defense back off of the shooter. So there's many...
But you still have Bufflin playing defense in that position, yep. but just rotating yep. down more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Enstrom doesn't have a great shot. People don't talk about that enough. So he's a little bit of a liability there.
Likes to set Buff up.
Yeah, not terrible, but not the greatest shot. So teams can play off of him a bit, but he's still a great passer and great vision. So, but the question also is, you know, who is that number one unit and how long is it that way? Do you play, because without Bogosian, you have a little bit of a, you're lacking in that kind of second pairing defenseman for the power play, and then you might very well use a forward. And practice is only so much. You'll see what happens in the game, and it's been 5 days of practice, so I wouldn't read too much into what's happened. But the way the team sets up their power play and what the units are, I assume they'll be the forward lines as they are, those top two lines. Maybe Scheifele gets in there and they move Wellwood to the point or something, but Wellwood's shot isn't good enough for the point. I know they've used him there before, but then you can really play off of Wellwood. So there's a lot of options and things to take into account.
You mentioned Scheifele. If Scheifele isn't getting power play time, why is he up with this team?
Just to get experience playing against men. That's it.
But isn't that where you would want to use him the most?
I assume he'll get some power play time. Second
guys,
power play.
The key to me, again, is Kane. Richie, last year, in the press box, watched Kane more than anybody and, in fact, wrote a piece for LegalCurve.com documenting every goal that Evander Kane scored. Mm-hmm. And what Richie's article proves is that Evander Kane can score all over the ice.
Yeah.
Got 30 goals and had a great year last year.
The point was to disprove the idea that he's completely one-dimensional in
and
the
he's
way
not.
He scores goals.
And a lot of people say he's a North-South player, and sure he is. He's mm-hmm. the fastest guy on the team, one of the fastest guys in the league. Mm-hmm. But the point is, Richie, and you said this early last year, and Drew just said it again, they have to use Evander Kane more.
I agree.
They have to use him on the first power play. If Ladd Little Wheeler is your top line, give Kane the top minutes and then give Ladd the second line minutes.
Or
don't use Antropov and the other guys you were using.
Or Little goes to the second. You can figure it out. I mean, Kane played, let me get in here and then let you continue as. Kane played 17:31 last year. Okay?
Per game.
Total minutes per game.
Yeah. Which that those should be up in the first place.
Needs to be up to 19:30 or so.
Yeah. And those extra minutes will come on the power play. I look at the power play, 12th in the league last year. Perry Pern's been brought in, and he will improve the special teams. He did a good job in Montreal. The penalty killing was terrible, but the power play at 12, I think, can even get better. Look at they didn't even use Evander Kane, but Bufflin and Enstrom on the back end. Mm-hmm. And Richie mentioned that they're the first line unit. It looks like Paul Postma and Hainsey, those will probably be the point guys. But I kind of agree with Richie. They got to get a little bit more creative here, because last year, even though Buff got the power play points and he's got the big shot, I think they got to give some teams different looks because mm-hmm. they've got they've got the type of team that can really take advantage of the power play. But it all starts with Kane. He's the most dynamic player they have, and they got to use him more.
Quickly, again, the penalty kill. Jim Slater, the key guy on the penalty kill again?
Yeah, because the face-offs and such. But their penalty kill needs to be better.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty poor last year.
Not only, Glass obviously is left and it changed, but schematically, I thought it got simple at times. And I actually was a little bit disappointed in terms of their neutral zone pressure on the penalty kill. I thought they played off too hard and gave teams the line.
Meaning they stood back. When you say the line, do you mean the red line or their own blue line?
Red line, but then you get speed to get right over the blue line. So
as opposed to like a sort of a full court press in basketball, they backed up to the red line to let the opposing team gain some speed through part of the neutral zone.
If you watch the Islanders, even they have actually an interesting way of they kind of play off one boards and then they both skate, two forwards will kind of skate from one board to the other to kind of close the ice off in half. It's an interesting way that some teams, a couple teams, not just the Islanders, play that way. I thought they could be a little more creative in their schemes, and I think you will help your players out a bit because the personnel here is generally the same, give or take a player or two. So if the personnel is the same, and you want to improve, certainly there can be some internal improvement by the players that you have, but also you need to be changing your scheme and giving different looks to teams and trying different things because what you did last year didn't work out very well.
Yep.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk defense and goaltending. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day, live on TSN 1290. Coming up at the top of the hour, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen will join us to talk about the Sens ahead of today's Jets-Sens game. 2 o'clock puck drop at MTS Center. Catch all the action here live on TSN 1290, your home for the Winnipeg Jets. Following us, Hustler and Lawless at 11 a.m., and then Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show gets underway at 1 o'clock. We're continuing on with our Winnipeg Jets preview. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. The Jets' defense and goaltending. The defense, if you had to ask most fans, is probably what scares people the most as we enter into this abbreviated 2012 NHL season. The loss of Zach Bogosian and the question about how many games is Zach Bogosian going to miss hangs over this team like a black cloud.
It's to me, determines whether or not this team has a realistic shot at making the playoffs. If Zach Bogosian plays all year, I think this team has a very realistic shot of making the playoffs. But there's so much ambiguity as to his status, as there is with every injury in the National Hockey League these days, that it's hard to make a prediction. We're assuming right now he's injured. It might take a couple of weeks. So then it gets, and we've talked about this on the show in the past, then you get to the question of, okay, who's your second pairing? Are they going to play Stewart and Hainsey, which it seems to be, and probably you want to put your most experienced guys as your second pairing. But those two guys have drawbacks, with all due respect to them. Stewart is your heart and soul guy. I mean, he hits, he can do everything. And he's a little more aggressive at the other team's lines than people expect. Like, he'll take chances sometimes, hitting and such. But he doesn't have a very good shot. He's not a great puck mover, and he's not the best skater. So he has his drawbacks. And then you look at Hainsey, not the strongest guy, not the best defensive coverage. So when we've talked about this, but when you put those two players up against the other team's second, so even today, you know, how do they play against Turris, LaTondress, and Albertson, which we believe to be the second line of the Senators? How do they play? That'll be an interesting indicator of team success this year. The other issue is the top defense pairing is dynamic offensively. There may not be a better offensive pairing in the league than Enstrom and Byfuglien, but they give, they take, and then they give it back a bit. I mean, those guys also have their drawbacks defensively. So you're really in a battle for, and that's why I think goals are going to be so important. Team defense is important, but team defense is always important. How they can score. And if they can score and then play with the lead with a team that's not great defensively, it will give them a lot of help, although every team tries to play with the lead. And then you look at, obviously, the third pairing, what it will be. And you're getting shaky there, guys. So your second and third pairing are really shaky. And if you're playing a team with three deep, like the Flyers, for example, then you're really shaky. And
that happened last year.
So the defense here, to me, is... Bogosian played, guys, look at the numbers, just strictly at the numbers in this case. Bogosian played 23 minutes
big
a
minutes.
Game
That's
last
big minutes
year.
For a young guy, yeah?
Who replaces those minutes?
And right now, Richie, it looks like Zach Redmond is staying for now. It looks like Paul Postma or Zach Redmond, I would bet on Postma in the lineup today, but it might be Redmond, with Klitsam as the last pairing. But right now... It's going to have to be a combination of Mark Stewart, Ron Hainsey. And Ron Hainsey at times, you know, even though, you know, he's considered an offensive defenseman, unfortunately he didn't score at all last year, but he did play a shutdown role. They gave up too many goals last year, Richie. And, you know, Claude Noel lets Byfuglien and Enstrom do their thing, which is move the puck, jump in on the play. Everyone knows how good Byf is. And I think you have to let Byf do that. Byf is like a... He's like a hybrid forward defenseman. You got to let Byf do that. He's one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. You got to let him do that. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Richie. Without Bogo, there's a huge hole there. Postma got the one-way contract, and you know he's got offensive talent, even though he struggled for the Ice Caps, according to Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram, said that on our show. But you know they're gonna have to pick up the minutes, and they're gonna have to do a good job in picking up the minutes, or they're gonna let in a lot of goals this year. Last year they were 26th in the NHL in goals against, and you're not gonna make the playoffs with doing that. No, you just won't. They're good offensively; they can make up for that sometimes, but you can't do that on a night in and night out basis. Claude Noel might let them, you know, play back and forth hockey, one goal here, one goal there, but it's not going to work. It's not that's not a good blueprint for a team. So I agree with Richie. They're going to have a huge problem filling the BOGO role. And you just have to hope that he comes back sooner rather than later.
You could argue they don't have a really good top four. You know, they're missing that fourth defenseman after Bogosian to really round out the top four.
When Bogosian's healthy.
When Bogosian's healthy. Yeah. So, and you want maybe Stewart and Hainsey, while they're, you know, they're getting a fair amount of money, especially Hainsey, to round out your bottom. You know,
sure. And the question, if Stewart and Hainsey, you know, and it's not going to be this case, but if Stewart and Hainsey happen to be your 5-6, you're a lot more comfortable with that than you are with them as your 3-4 or even your 4-5.
Right, and you may split it up, and then you have, you know, Postman, Redmond, both right-handed guys playing on the third defense unit. But I think let's talk in practical terms here, okay? Let's look at the team. You played the team in your division 5 times this year, right?
Not every team. Some you play 5, some you play 4.
So 5, 5, and 4, 4, right? So 18 games.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So 18 games against... So the question is, Ezian, now, if Bogosian comes back after 2 weeks, this problem is, for the most part, alleviated.
You're right. The sooner he's back, the less of an issue this turns out to be. But if he's not back until the end of February, then that's really when you're in trouble.
Because you look at the second lines on all the teams. So you look at the Jordan Staal line with Jeff Skinner in Carolina. How does Stewart and Hainsey match up against them? And then you look at Florida.
The answer is not well.
The Fleischman, you know, the interesting line there they have of Mueller and Huberto and Kovalev, skill-wise, you know, how do they keep up with those guys? So you look at that line. You look at Washington's second line with Ribeiro. You look at – who's the other team I'm missing?
Tampa Bay.
You look at LeCavier's line. So – and maybe they put – with Purcell, whatever it may be, the lines that match up there. You're between a rock and a hard place.
Every other team in the Southeast Division has a significant advantage on their second line versus the Jets' second-pairing defense.
Right, and it doesn't mean, though, and you look at it from both sides, doesn't mean that the Jets' second line,
doesn't
whichever you determine
advantage.
It is, you know, the Jokinen or Lil line, doesn't have an advantage against, you know, Washington's deeper on the back end. We'll give them that. Carolina isn't, though. Florida is, because they've signed Kuba, right? They've signed Kuba and Jovanovski, so they've gotten better. Carolina is. That's why I don't like them that much this year.
Tampa Bay is. Right.
So you are in a more difficult position.
And, Richie, this isn't a shot to Mark Stewart at all, because Mark Stewart... We all agree that he's a fantastic defenseman. Led the team in block shots.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Can drop the gloves. He's tough. He's a veteran defenseman. But that's actually just a credit to Bogosian. I mean, Bogosian, mm-hmm. another guy that's, you know, his contract is expiring. He's the future of the... If he's not the number one defenseman now, which he isn't because Bufflin and Enstrom get more minutes, he's the future number one defenseman of the Winnipeg Jets franchise.
I don't agree with that
with him and Trouba.
I don't agree. I don't know if Bogosian ever reaches number one status.
Okay. Well, let's say that he's a future of the team. Regardless if he's number one, he's a future of the team, a young defenseman.
If he plateaus as your number three defenseman, he's still a very good number three defenseman.
Yeah.
But quickly, before the last 5 minutes or so of this segment, maybe even a little bit less because we have James Gordon, the Ottawa Citizen, coming up, let's talk goaltending. We know that this is Andre Pavlik. The team has to rely on Andre Pavlik.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that he has to be better than he was last year. And he was pretty good last year until I believe he wore down strictly from the overuse and from seeing too many shots.
Yes.
What does a good year for Andre Pavlik look like? How does Andre Pavlik take that next step in his development?
I think he limits the bad games that he has, the games where he lets in 5 or 6 goals. Right off the bat, I want to say, forget about what happened in the Czech Extra League. That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Let's not say that he had a bad time in Europe and all that. The DUI is behind him. Let's focus on this season. He didn't have a good season last season, but this year is a fresh start. He's got the new contract. He has to play less, in my opinion, and show a better work ethic and a more consistent performance on a nightly basis. And it's pretty simple. I think, again, we had Justin Goldman of the Goalie Guild on last week. He breaks down every aspect of the goalie. Says that he's one of his favorite goalies to watch because of the way he loves to stop the puck. I have lots of confidence in Pavlik, but in a 48-game season, Richie, I don't think he should play 43 games. I think he should play, you know, 37, 38 games and know that Montoya can give you more games because I thought Chris Mason didn't play enough last year. But consistency. He's got to show more consistency.
Not a make-or-break season for him because the guy just signed a big contract. You know, and he doesn't seem like he's always in the best shape. I think that's one of my issues with him. You take care of yourself once you get a big deal. It's physically, he has the pieces. He has this. He's able if he wants to do it. And you know what? He's tall. He's big. He takes up a lot of the net. Needs to be a little more, I think, aware, not scrambling as much, but capable. Certainly capable. The question is, can he mentally focus? I think that's important. Mentally focus for that many games. I think Montoya, and I said this a couple weeks ago, I think Montoya helps him because Montoya's young and Montoya wants that job.
I think
Chris
he's
Mason.
Hungry. Yeah.
Chris Mason.
I'm kind of hungry right now.
May have wanted that job, but knew he wasn't going to get that job. Al Montoya sees a 5-year contract for Pavlik, and he says, oh, you know, I'm not sure. But he's young enough that if he has a huge year, or just a good year, he puts doubt in the minds of people, and he's a pending UFA, right?
He's a sixth overall pick of the Rangers. This is a guy that they were – I know it didn't work out, Richie, but I'm just – my point is I'm adding to your point that the Rangers thought he might be the goalie of the future at one point.
I agree. And, you know, Michigan overrated him for the World Juniors and after they picked Blackburn. So whatever it was, I forget who was – I think he was after Blackburn. But in any event, the point is – a younger guy pushes him, I think. An older guy makes him feel more comfortable. And I think Pavlik needs a little bit of motivation.
That's good.
Like that.
Yeah, I think good?
Yeah.
I think that's good.
I think it's good.
That way you don't get complacent and you both guys want to fight for their job and want to perform at the best of their abilities. And if you don't get complacent, odds are, you know, your performance on the ice will hopefully look better as well. Let's go to break. When we come back, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen joins us to talk about the Ottawa Senators ahead of today's Jets-Senators game. Puck drop 2 o'clock here live on your home for the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website where the Winnipeg Jets and NHL morning papers are available is www.illegalcurve.com.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. He covers the Senators for the Citizen, and he is the Ottawa Citizen sports editor. James, welcome home to Winnipeg.
Thanks. Good to be back.
James, you know, last year the Senators were the Cinderella team of the Eastern Conference. I think they exceeded all expectations getting into the playoffs, never mind taking the Rangers all the way to Game 7 of the first round. Do you expect them to repeat that success this year?
You know what? It's hard to say. I mean, they got off to a great start last year and then kind of faltered a bit in the middle and then wound up kind of backing into the playoffs into the eighth spot. It looked for a while they might get as high as sixth or seventh, and then they fell off a bit, but did just enough to get there. And, I mean, it's a situation with any sort of bubble team. I mean, you look around that area, you know, with, you say, Buffalo, Ottawa, Toronto, depending on how much of a Toronto fan you are, Montreal and Winnipeg and those types of teams that are going to be in that area. You know, it's usually only, 2 to 4 points separating them. So, and a couple bad games is going to make that difference. So, especially in a short season. So, you know, I think that on paper they have a good enough team to do it. I think another sort of year in the books of experience is to their benefit because they do have a lot of young players. I've got them going sixth, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, just missed the cut.
James, what did you think of the team's off-season acquisitions? Obviously, the Guillaume Latendresse signing and then the Mark Mathot acquisition for Nick Foligno.
Well, we'll see on Mathot. I mean, Carlson was super comfortable with Philip Kuba the last couple of years, and obviously the price tag was too high for him, but you know, Mathot has said that he's going to be the guy who's kind of the defensive conscience on the pair and let Carlson do his thing. So remains to be seen if that's what happens, but I mean, seeing Mathot, you know, he's a big guy, he's a pretty good skater for a big guy, so I think he'll be able to keep up. Latendresse is continuing a long line of gambles here. I mean, Brian Murray is not afraid to roll the dice on a player with maybe a bit of a spotty history. I mean, he got Pascal Leclerc. That didn't work out so well. He acquired Nikita Filatov. That didn't really work out. But, I mean, they're kind of low-risk, high-reward kind of things if they do pan out. And they're hoping that with Latendresse, it does. And that means he needs to stay healthy for a year.
James, Jared Cowan is a young defenseman, big young defenseman, who played a full season last year, ate up big minutes, but as we know, he's out for the season. How big of a loss is that? And, you know, how are they going to replace him? Because they had him slotted in, obviously, playing a big role again this year.
It's a big deal. He, you know, had a great season last year. A young player, so obviously he had his ups and downs. But you could see already that he was the kind of player that was going to be kind of the co-franchise defenseman with Erik Karlsson. And, you know, it was a really tough luck thing for him. I mean, he was telling me about what happened. You know, he tried to stop a puck at the blue line and took a hit and then thought he was okay and then got up after tying his skates and was, uh-oh, something was wrong here. And then it turned out that he would be out the whole season. And, you know, a shock to the organization because he was kind of slated to be sort of number one defensive defenseman. He's kind of the Erik Chris Phillips in that role. So, certainly, it's a big hit, and you know, as you see with the Senators lineup today, they're going with their top AHL Binghamton tandem as their third pair here. So we'll see how that turns out.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. James, how do you see the Senators goalie situation playing out over the course of the year? We know that they have three quality netminders: Craig Anderson, Ben Bishop, and then Robin Lehner, who sounds like he's going to start the year down in Binghamton of the AHL.
Yeah, I mean, Anderson gets the start. He probably deserved the start. I mean, he was a big reason that they did make the playoffs last year. It's a funny kind of flip of situation in Ottawa because for so many years, it was always, you know, how poor the goaltending was and how there was, you know, no reliable options. And now they're kind of, there's a wealth of them. I mean, Lehner is ready for the NHL right now. He'll probably go back down to Binghamton barring an injury or if Brian Murray decides to make a move and trade Ben Bishop. But, I mean, he's NHL ready now. He's on a two-way. That's the only reason he's going down. And Bishop is a solid goalie, too. I mean, he hasn't really proven himself at this level yet, but he was kind of widely considered last year to be the best goalie not playing in the league. So, you know, if Anderson, I think he'll get a chance at the start of the season here to find his feet, maybe a few games. But, I mean, they can't go much beyond that if Anderson is struggling because, again, time's a factor this season.
Looks like we may have. James, you still there?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Did I cut out there?
Yeah, you cut out there for a second. No worries, though.
Okay. Well, it's okay. I was just enjoying my own answer to myself here as I talk to myself.
James, Daniel Alfredsson obviously was championing the bid to get back, and he had to wait half a season for the league to settle their issues with the seat with the players. What do you expect for him this year? Obviously, you know, it appears to be his last season. He's going to line up on the second line right wing today alongside Kyle Turris and Lata Andres. Do you see a productive season from the wily old veteran?
Yeah, and you know what? Talking to him lately, you kind of get the impression that this might not be his last season. You know, he talked a lot about during the lockout how he was enjoying, you know, just being a father and doing that thing. And you know, he sounded really discouraged at different points during the lockout where, you know, he kind of didn't even care if hockey came back. But you get the sense now that it is back, he is really excited about it again. And, you know, I think a compressed schedule can be hard on a veteran, but I think it was also to his benefit to get this extra half year off to get that rest. And, you know, barring any kind of injuries, I wouldn't be surprised to see him back next year. He's still a good player. He's lost a few steps here and there, but he's still got that hockey IQ that lets him get into areas that he can still score goals. So I think as long as he's productive and healthy, it'll still be around for a little while.
James, I'm interested to hear what your answer to this is going to be, and don't worry, I'm not going to ask you a question that's completely off the radar, but it's about Erik Karlsson, and obviously he won the Norris last year. Everybody wants to talk about Erik Karlsson. He had a 78-point season, and you know it's well deserved that he's getting a lot of the hype. He's an extremely talented young defenseman. But do you think he'll be able to replicate last season?
Well, I think it would be hard for any defenseman to replicate a Norris season, right? I mean, it was everything kind of went right for him last year, and certainly he has the talent, and you know, he I don't know off the top of my head how many points he won the defense scoring title by, but I think it was around 20 points or something. So he's the premier, I think, offensive defenseman in the league right now, and he's still very young. So you can see it happening. But again, you know, it's I'm sure not easy to win the Norris Trophy, and you know, seasons like that don't come around every year unless you're Nick Lidstrom. So, you know, he does have to keep proving himself because, like I said, he is young, and he had to change the minds of a lot of doubters last year because there was a narrative about him that he was this huge defensive liability, which he turned out not to be last season. He's actually, you know, quite quick in the defensive zone now. So, the tools are there. We'll see if the will's there, and you know, anything can happen.
James, last year Colin Greening kind of took a step up. You know, obviously he's a big physical specimen, skates well, and he seemed to kind of solidify himself in one of the Senators' top 12. What do you expect for Söderberg this year? Is he the guy this year that they're expecting to kind of take that next step and be a part of this unit going forward?
Well, a lot of the guys on the team and the management, I mean, just rave about him. He's got a great shot. He's a rookie, but he's 22. He's won Swedish Elite League Championship. He broke Daniel Alfredsson's playoff goal record on the way. He's already made his debut in the NHL and late in a playoff series. So he's ready for the league. I mean, how much success he has, you know, is yet to be seen, but he's really benefited from being able to play half the season down in Binghamton and get sort of acclimatized to the smaller ice surface here. The speed of the decision making that's required on a smaller ice surface. And if you can start your NHL career on Jason Spezza's line, you know, you're being set up for success. So I think, you know, hopes are really high for him.
James, we'll let you go on this last question. With no exhibition games and the extra abbreviated training camp, you know, what do you expect from this afternoon's game? Are you expecting sloppy play and sort of tentative action, or you think it's going to be a little bit more pond hockey style while everybody sort of gets their legs under them?
Well, I mean, you guys know, I think a lot of teams come into a building like the MTS Center, the Bell Center, and, you know, they're really excited to play there because of the energy in the building, and couple that with the opening game, and you'll probably see a lot of running around early, and I think the players expect that. You know, they've said there'll be mistakes and probably be some bad penalties, but I think everyone's hoping it gets settled down by the end of the first period and they can just settle into their plans. So probably a bit scrambly in the first period, but we'll see. And you know, they had a couple of pretty crazy games between these two teams last year, so it should be fun.
James, I know that Drew said that was going to be the last question, but we've asked you about the Jets and the Senators and previewing the game, but the last question is probably the most important question. You're from Winnipeg, you're back in Winnipeg, obviously covering the Senators for the Ottawa Citizen. Are you going to finally accept the challenge and after the game come out with all five members of a legal curve and have a post-game beverage?
At the Palomino. I'd love to, guys, but NHL travel being what it is, we take off right after the game.
Oh, no, you're saying no, James.
Did that last year, too. What do you mean?
Oh,
maybe I'll take a rain check on that.
Okay.
James Gordon,
I'll take it.
From the Ottawa Citizen, thanks very much for joining us this morning, and we'll see you at the MTS Center in a few hours.
All right, thanks.
Take care, James. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290. And when we come back, we're going to do Winnipeg Jets over-under. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes and on the TSN 1290 website. You can find us, our show, constantly in both of those locations. This segment of the show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done.
We had our hockey pool there the other day. That's it was right. Good times, good pizza, treated us well.
They always
shout
do.
Out to our boys at Carbone.
Yeah, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, you can watch it there this afternoon. Gentlemen, some Winnipeg Jets over-under. You know, seeing, you know, a number, I picked up a number of sort of random stats and wins and things of that nature, and I want to hear your over-under estimation on them.
Okay, so right off the bat, over-under media meals that Remus and I have, I'm going to go over 15.
Over 15? I was going to say over 50, which is even more bizarre because it's only a 24-game home schedule.
Remus and I were you know, always there getting those media meals. They're great. I look forward to having more this year.
I promise you nobody cares about that. I guarantee you.
Remus does.
Winnipeg Jets,
yeah, what?
Over, under 24 wins this year.
Over.
Over.
Yeah. Yeah, over.
Am I on?
No, Remus, you can't hear you.
24 wins over, under in a 48-game season. They're going to be around there, I'd say.
I know they're going to be around there. That's why I picked.
Well, so I don't know. I mean, yeah, good call. Good call, Drew. That was stupid on my part. I'll go over by 2. I say they win 26 games.
Okay.
You're probably going to need 30 to get into the playoffs minimum, though. 32, maybe.
Well, if you go by last year's, we'll pull it up here. Last year's, you know, you just take it, well, not divided by 2 necessarily. There's obviously 7 more games, but. In any event, I think 24, the worst teams in the league usually go, you know, win 24 with the shootout, so I think they're going to win over 24.
Okay. Jets over under 48 points.
Over.
Well, if we both said over for that, the last question, it would have to be over for this question.
Well, you're a mathematician.
Yeah, it's not like my dad was a math professor at the University of Winnipeg for 32 years or anything. I'm going to say, shout out to my dad, by the way, I'm going to go over.
Let me ask you, this isn't an over-under, but how many points is it going to take to make the playoffs?
Last year was 93, if I'm correct, in the Eastern Conference.
That's right.
So in a 48-game schedule, I can't do that math off the top of my head.
253.
93 divided by 2.
It's not a straight divide, though.
Well, I know, but I mean, if you're thinking...
it's about 11 points over the amount of games you played.
50 points? Is it going to be around 50 points?
11 points over the amount of games you played. So if you divide that by 2 a little bit, it's about 6 points. So it's about 53, 54 around there.
Okay, so 53 or 54 points. Yeah, I think the Jets will be around... They're not going to finish that far behind. I'd say they'll get 49, 50 points.
Okay, because none of us have the Jets making the playoffs.
I have the Jets as, like, I think it depends on Bogosian's health. But I think it certainly can. I think they'll be right on the fringe.
So you have them in 9th?
Yeah, 9th.
Okay. Evander Kane over under 20 goals.
Ooh. Over. Over. Short season?
Under.
Over.
Oh, Remus is alive. I'm going to go, I'm going to pick even. 20, exactly. How do you like that, Drew?
That's fine. That's fine. You're making it harder on yourself by being specific, but sure, you could.
That
be
wasn't
right.
An option.
Yeah. Fine. We'll change the name of the game to over, under, or even.
Thank
How
you.
About that?
Thank you.
Blake Wheeler, over, under, or even 35 points.
Over.
Over.
I'm going to go over as well.
Okay. Andrew Ladd, over, under, even 30 points.
I'll start it off, Drew. I'll go over.
That's a tough one, Drew. I know that's a good number you point there. I mean, those assists sometimes certainly evade him a bit. I'm going to say under.
Led the team in game-winning goals last year.
Olli Jokinen, over, under, even 35 points.
In a shortened season, I think I'll go over, slightly over.
I'm going to go under.
Dustin Byfuglien.
By the way, notice Remus is only selecting which answers he wants to give.
That's okay. He's busy over there on the other side. That's fine. Dustin Byfuglien.
Just giving you a hard time.
Over, under, even 30 points.
Richie, I'll start it off. In a half season, I'll go over. 35 points.
I'm going to over, too. I think he kills it on the power play.
Okay. Toby Enstrom. Over, under, even 25 points.
Oh, for sure, over.
Under.
If he's healthy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Under?
Yeah.
You want to expand on that at all?
Kreskin over here.
Well, no, I mean, even if he gets 24 points, 23 points, that's still a pretty good defensive year, over 40 points. So I just think, I don't think they both, I think Byfuglien scores a little more goals, so.
Okay. Andrei Pavlik, over, under 38, over, under, even, has he, 38 games started.
Ooh, I think he will be willing to play more, but how many he'll end up playing? I'll go, he played a lot last year. I'll go over.
I'm going over as well.
Andre Pavlik.
I don't think he should play more than 38, to be honest with you.
Over, under, even, 20 wins.
20 wins?
Over.
In 30, if he plays 38 games, 20 wins, 48 games, I'll go over. Yeah.
And the last one, we'll go to break a little bit early before we bring on Eric Dehatchuk. The last one, Zach Bogosian, over, under, even, 30 games played.
I hope that it's over. I'm going to go under, though.
I think it's over that, because I think he probably, if he misses, it would be about 2.5 weeks with 15, 16, 17 games, so over.
Okay, there you have it. That's over. Sorry?
Just to qualify, as we were talking about before, you miss that many games in a shortened season. That's killer.
There you have it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. When we come back, Eric Dehatchuk from the Globe and Mail is going to join us, and we do remind you to join in the Illegal Curve 50-50 contest and the Illegal Curve game-winning goal contest. Information on both can be found on our website, www.illegalcurve.com, and send in your responses via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Shortly before 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Remus gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Is he more of an expert for Rick when he does the Rona Roundtable, or is he more an expert for us when he does our show?
I don't know, but Rick Ralph is excited to see all five members of Illegal Curve. He tweeted me yesterday, and he is pumped up. He's missed us.
In fact, I believe what he said is he's not excited.
Sorry, I got lost in translation.
An honest mistake. We're going to have Eric Dehatchuk from the Globe and Mail joining us momentarily here on the program. I think we have Eric. Are we ready to go with that? One more second. Okay, I'll stall.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Globe and Mail, Eric Dehatchuk. Eric, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys.
Eric, you know, we got to start with the fact that this is going to be a season that is unlike most others. The closest one in comparison, obviously, is 1995's 48-game season. What do you see as the main differences between this 48-game season and the one from about 17, 18 years ago?
Well, I remember being highly entertained during that 48-game season, and I'm not sure if it isn't just because, you know, A, you know, we remember things that happened a long time ago kind of glowingly, and B, I think there was the same level of excitement then as there is now in terms of, you know, nobody knew whether they were going to get the NHL or not get the NHL. And for a time, you know, in the same way that it did this year, back then it looked like the season would be lost, and I think a lot of people were frustrated by that. You know, any team that had, you know, that was sort of in that championship window really wanted to play. And, you know, I was covering the Calgary Flames in those days, and they did have a good team. And I think that they thought they had a, you know, a decent chance to do something. And so, so I think that that's what happened. I think that, you know, there was sort of this pent-up emotion and demand. And, you know, the hockey looked good. I mean, I was talking to Kelly Rudy about this, and he said that he'd never been more nervous. Felt as a goaltender, he was really behind everybody else, and it was crazy. And every game mattered, and the intensity levels were really high. And you know, it was, you know, everyone calls it a sprint to the finish line. And my colleague Dave Ebner thinks it's a half marathon. I think that actually might be a more accurate way of looking at it. But you know, if you look to the standings, boy, you know, I think Ottawa was terrible that year, and every other team was in it until about the last week.
Eric, you look at the Eastern Conference, and my personal opinion, the three best teams there are the Rangers, the Bruins, and the Penguins. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick between those three, which one of those teams do you think is the best?
You know, it's a great question, because I hate making picks at the best of times. I know my friend Bob McKenzie won't do it anymore, because it's, first of all, you know, like the teams that, you know, that are going to play in the playoffs are going to be different than the teams that, you know, that we're seeing right now. And plus, we haven't even seen those teams. So, I mean, I looked at those, and then the Globe makes us make picks. So I think I picked the Rangers and St. Louis for no reason other than I didn't want to pick Pittsburgh and Vancouver. What I like about the Rangers is, you know, that they are an extremely well-coached team. And I think scoring went down during the last 48-game season because I'm not sure what the reasons were, and New Jersey won. And defense seemed to trump everything in that particular season. And so when I look at what I consider to be the best defensive team in the league, I would suggest that that's the New York Rangers. I mean, I like their goaltending. I like their 1-6 defensemen. I mean, they didn't get a lot from Mark Stahl last year. You know, he was coming off a tough year. But I think that they're going to get a lot more from him this year. And obviously picking up a guy like Nash, and he's a guy with a lot to prove. You know, there were a lot of people that were telling me, you know, during that period of time where he was being shopped, how good is Rick Nash really? And these are NHL people, like general managers that make these calls and people who are in the industry. And I said, well, what do you mean how good is he really? He said, take a look at what his point production is. Now, you know, no one knows if he is really a 60 to 70 point guy because he plays for a bad team in Columbus, or if he's a guy that, you know, that came in and had, you know, like one really great goal scoring season the year that he tied Kovalchuk and Iginla for the Rocket Richard, and otherwise has been, you know, like a high draft choice that scores some beautiful highlight reel goals, but the consistency isn't there. And I said, well, you know, I mean, those are good questions. So I think that we're going to start to get some answers about Rick Nash and how good he really is this year. I happen to think he's really good. And so the fact that he's on a team that finally, for the first time in his life, has a chance is going to be really interesting. I mean, I thought he was an impact player for Canada in the Olympics. And when you can make an impact at a tournament that good, that tells me that there's something special there. We haven't seen it in the National Hockey League yet. I just suspect we're going to see it now.
Eric, I agree with you wholeheartedly on Rick Nash. Looking at the Southeast Division, it looks like every team has some flaws, at least one or two flaws at each position. Which team do you think is going to emerge as the division winner in the Southeast Division?
Oh, brother. That's another tough one.
Prediction time again.
Well, you know what? I mean, put it this way. I think Florida is the one team that's going backwards there. Although, I don't mind them taking a chance on Kovalev just to supplement, an offense that really wasn't very good. But I think Florida had a terrific overtime record last year, won a lot of games that they probably shouldn't have won, just had one of those kind of charmed seasons that teams occasionally have, and probably Florida deserved to have after all of the terrible luck that they'd had in the previous dozen years. So, but I don't think that they have nearly enough scoring depth there. And I think that, you know, they do have some nice pieces in terms of the kids that they've drafted, but how much of an impact are they going to have right away? Like, Huberdeau is going to be a better player in 2 years' time than he is going to be this year. You know, losing Garrison and the goals that he scored from the blue line, can Brian Campbell be that good again? So I think Florida is going backwards. And then I think the other four teams are all going forward. I mean, I think that Tampa has, if Lindback is everything that they think he is, has solidified their goaltending. And they were a team, they were sort of like a poor man's Toronto in the sense that, you know, I thought what undermined Toronto last year when they fell out of the playoff race, because they weren't bad for the first 50 games. I mean, they were right there through 48 games, was that their goaltending just collapsed. And so, you know, and I think that happened in Tampa too. You know, age finally caught up with Dwayne Rolison. Garon was pretty good at times, but other times really struggled. So, you know, I like a lot of what I see on that Tampa team, but I didn't like their goaltending. So if you can, you know, like if you're a good team and you just have one thing that you have to fix and you fix that, then I think you can go back to being competitive again. I mean, they were in the Final Four 2 years ago. So I think that they probably have the best chance of getting those questions answered. I mean, I like some of the moves that Carolina made. Obviously, they needed to put more skill into that lineup. So Semin, you know, a mercurial guy that when he goes on those streaks where he's feeling good, you know, he'll score a goal a game for 10 or 12 games. And I guess the Carolina hopes that he doesn't have a lot of those 25-game goalless droughts as well. And, you know, I think Jordan Staal and Eric Staal, that's going to be an interesting experiment to see how those guys make out on the same team. I mean, on paper, that seems like a real genius thing to do, to bring the two of them together, you know, and hopefully it'll make both of them better. I don't know that they're going to necessarily play together a lot except on the power play, but you know, I still think that Carolina doesn't have enough right now. You know, when Justin Falk gets a little bit better, I think they're going to be improved. And then, of course, Winnipeg is the wild card. Another team that I think has good pieces, but is going to be better when Scheifele hopefully, you know, starts to get into his prime. And also, I think Zach Bogosian, I know, I mean, maybe in Winnipeg they talk about him a lot. He's a kind of a forgotten man around the National Hockey League. Zach Bogosian was a prime prospect in the Doughty draft, in the Pietrangelo draft, in the Tyler Myers draft. So there's three guys that have become, like, really above average, you know, to trending towards star defensemen. And then you've got Bogosian and you've got Luke Shen, who's trying to get a fresh start in Philadelphia. So if Bogosian can ever get healthy and can ever round into the kind of defenseman that Atlanta thought they had when they drafted him between Pietrangelo and Doughty, boy, that would be huge. Because, you know, Bufflin is there, you know, real interesting guy, and Enstrom is still there, real interesting guy. If the goaltending is good, I mean, you know, they're on their way. I'm just not sure that it's going to be this year.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Eric DeHatchik from the Globe and Mail. Eric, every year people want to write off Nashville and Phoenix as, you know, quote unquote, this is the year that they fall off. Do you see that happening this year, or do you see both teams maintaining a playoff position in the West?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. You didn't see my team in the Pierre LeBrun fantasy pool, I guess. I've got Pekka is playing goal for me. I've got Shea Weber, and I've got Roman Josi. Honestly, I've got David Leguan. I've got Patrick Hornquist, and I've got Martin Erat. So 26 players you're allowed. I have six Nashville Predators. Six. So I'm hoping that that's the answer right there. I don't think they're going to drop off that dramatically. I mean, I like everyone else, I get that Ryan Suter was a big piece of the puzzle there. You know, and he and Weber, you know, Barry Trotz told me this himself last year. He said, you know, Suter helps Weber as much as Weber helps Suter. Those guys really feed off of each other, and they're good for each other, and that's why we pair them together. Because, you know, there is the temptation when you've got two players of that elite caliber to split them up, right? You know, put a lesser guy with one of the big guys and another lesser guy with one of the big guys, and then play them together when you have to. I remember that's what Anaheim did when they had Niedermeyer and Pronger. Those guys played together in the last minute of every game. They played some power play time together, but it was better if one played with Beauchemin and one played with whomever, I can't remember. So that's an important missing piece. But they were a good team, a really good team before that. And I think a lot went wrong when they tried to overreach. You know, they brought in Radulov, they brought in Andre Kostitsyn, and they really felt that, you know, that if they got those guys, that would, you know, make a difference in terms of their offensive production. It didn't work out, and so I think they've gone back to the Nashville philosophy or formula, which is, you know, relentless attention to defense, extremely well coached, you know, buy into the, you know, the Barry Trotz system. If you can play it, you play. If you can't, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, Colin Wilson then still hasn't cracked the top six there, because as far as they're concerned, he is still learning to play their way. They like him. You know, at some point, you know, he will probably get there. But, you know, how long did it take David Leguan to earn Trotz's trust? It took years, you know, but he's got it now. And he's, you know, he seems to have figured out that to play in that system, you have to be, you know, as relentless defensively as you are on offense. So I think they're going to be okay. I really do. And you know, the one thing that hasn't changed is that Rene is still a high-end frontline goalie. You know, most people would rate it right up there with Lundqvist and Quick as the top three in the game right now. So I think they're going to be fine. Now, Phoenix is a different matter. I mean, I love the coaching staff there. I think that they do a tremendous job. I think they always, you know, manage to do more with the sum of the individual parts than what they've got. But I do think that there is a chance that they could drop a little bit. I mean, I think they'll miss Ray Whitney. Can Mike Smith have that kind of year again? You know, the one thing about Rene is he's done it year after year after year. So I don't think there's any question in most people's minds that this guy is the real thing. You know, Mike Smith was a guy that came in there looking for an opportunity, who made the most of that opportunity. So that's a very admirable thing. But he has had a fairly checkered history up until that point. So I think that we need to see, you know, another couple of years of that same level of goaltending from Mike Smith for us to group him in that category. Now, I don't think he signed his contract yet, so I think he's still pending unrestricted. So, you know, that obviously is a motivating factor. You know, if he has a good year this year, there's a pretty good chance that he'll cash a pretty big paycheck, you know, next summer. So, but I think there's a chance. I mean, I think four out of the five teams in that division made the playoffs last year. I would be shocked if that happened again.
Eric, we talked, you know, about teams possibly taking a step back, and I guess it leads into your article, your NHL notebook, Saturday notebook, that talked about Nicklas Lidström in Detroit. There's a lot of talk about, you know, how will the Red Wings fare after Lidström has departed and gone back to Sweden. What do you figure there?
Well, Kenny Holland had a long talk with him about a lot of different things, and we talked about a friend of mine, Damian Cox from the Toronto Star, and I and Kenny were leaning on the railing at the draft the year after Detroit won the Cup, right? So you know how that is. You know, if you win the Stanley Cup, you're the team that's on the far right-hand side in the back, so it's later rounds. And Kenny walks over and starts, you know, schmoozing with us. This is what we do. And, he starts teasing Damian about how, I guess, during the for the last lockout, he'd written a piece saying that, you know, the Red Wings were, you know, on their way out, because, you know, or just on the way down. And I think that was, you know, he wasn't the only one that thought that, but just, you know, a salary cap era comes in, and here's the team that really took advantage of its big market clout, right? And the Rangers spent a lot of money and didn't have success. The Leafs spent a lot of money and didn't have success. But Detroit, they made smart buys all the time, and they were just a well-managed team. But you know, he suggested that not having that advantage might hurt them, and the fact that they were getting older and so on and so forth. It was a common enough theme. Well, Kenny says, and still apparently he still has that article on his desk now. So that's how many years? 7, 8 years. And he said he leaves it there as a constant reminder that, you know, you have to, you know, it's a what have you done for me lately kind of world. So, and I bring that up because, you know, the same questions are being asked about them now. It's worse, actually, because, you know, you don't replace a guy like Nicklas Lidström. And, you know, you look at that team, and after Datsyuk and after Zetterberg and after Nick Cronwall, it's hard to get excited about very many of those guys. But he thinks that they're going to be competitive, and he thinks that they'll score enough and have, you know, veterans on the blue line that can burn minutes, and that it would have been nice to get Ryan Suter. I mean, he didn't say that, but, you know, I sort of put those words in his mouth, and I think it was well known that they were in on it, and at one point they thought that they had a real good shot at him, but that didn't happen. And so, you know, he will probably have, you know, some money to spend after this year is over, and he can try again in the free agent market. The one thing that has happened to Detroit this year that hasn't happened in the past is they almost always got the free agents that they wanted. I mean, do you remember a couple of years back when Marian Hossa went there on a one-year contract on a huge discount from what, you know, the money that he was being offered in Edmonton at the time? It was a real attractive destination, and you know, Kenny used to always say, you know, I can't offer the sun, I can't offer a new building, I can only offer the hockey. And just because the lure of hockey matters so much, and it's hockey town, you know, a lot of guys just gravitated to Detroit because of the, you know, the professionalism that organization has. So it's a real good question. But he convinced me that Detroit will be in the mix for a playoff spot, and then if their main guys stay healthy, you know, they have as good a chance as anybody. And then once you're in the playoffs, his line to me was, he said, you know, somebody asked me, you know, who are the Stanley Cup contenders? And he said, my answer was, 16 teams that make the playoffs, every single one of them is a Stanley Cup contender. It's a pretty interesting way of looking at it, because I think that, you know, Los Angeles proved that can be done. And certainly all the teams that were, at least were finalists during, you know, sort of bookended by the last lockout. I mean, there was an Edmonton team, there was an Ottawa team. I mean, there were a lot of teams in there that made a Stanley Cup final with what you would suggest would be, you know, not a great team. So I think that that's a real good way of looking at how this season is going to go and how the NHL is going to evolve under the salary cap, because, you know, we saw what parity wrought during the last one, and I think it's just going to be more of the same until this agreement expires.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail, previewing the NHL season.
Eric, as you know, they're freaking out a little bit about their second line on the left coast, just a little bit. They're freaking out just a little bit. Do you think that until Kessler returns, the improvements that they've made on defense are going to be able to counteract the loss in offensive production that they're going to miss, obviously, without Kessler and Booth?
You know, I mean, that's a great question. I don't think they're going to miss Booth that much. I don't think he has had that much of an impact since he's arrived in Vancouver. I think that they were hoping that they would get more out of him this year than they had in the past. But Kessler, obviously, is a key piece. And what they sometimes could do very well was, you know, if they wanted to, they could drop Burrows down to the line and play with Kessler and then, you know, move a, you know, a bunch of different people up playing with the Sedins. I mean, Mason Raymond has played up there. Yannick Hansen has played up there. So, you know, Ella and Vigneault's lines are never cast in stone, and they, and they're moving all around. But you're right. I mean, they, you know, probably it would be nice to have Cody Hodgson if they could undo the that deal for Cassian, and a guy like Hodgson could easily step up and fill that gap, and they wouldn't be having the kind of conversations that they're having right now. So I don't think Vancouver, without Ryan Kessler in the lineup, is a Stanley Cup contender. But I've not seen any indication that this injury is going to keep him out the entire year. That, you know, yeah, he has to start on IR. It might be a couple of weeks. It might be longer. I mean, you can't, whatever the reports are, you can't get a true indication of what's actually going on until he's in the lineup the first time, and then you see how he plays, because that's the nature of reporting of injuries in the National Hockey League. I don't trust anybody anymore. But I do believe that he is going to play. I believe he's going to play enough games to get into game shape, and I think Vancouver is good enough to make the playoffs. So if they don't make it as a one or a two or a seed or whatever, I don't think that matters as much anymore. So I think that the one flaw in the argument, I heard one of the Vancouver newspaper guys talking on TSN about how, you know, it's practically irresponsible that he isn't moving Luongo right now to fill that gap because they don't look like a contender now. Well, you know, my answer is they don't win the Stanley Cup in January. They don't hand it out. You don't get a ring for how you look in the first game. It's how you look in the last game that you play in the season that matters. So the smart general managers are the ones like Gillis that you know, it's a poker game, and that's what he's doing right now. And he's not getting the kind of offers that he wants right now, and he understands that in a season like this, the law of averages suggests that somebody who thinks they have a chance to be really good is going to lose their starting goaltender. And suddenly it's like, where do you get a starting goaltender? Where do you get a start? Oh, wait a second. Vancouver has a starting goaltender. And that's when you get somebody overpaying or giving you something that they don't want to give up, even if it's like a high draft choice. So he's playing poker and he's gambling, and I support the position that he's taking. You know, that if a team is just trying to give the kinds of, you know, multiple assets that the Rangers, for example, gave to Columbus for Rick Nash, I think he wants like one really good piece and then a couple of supplementary pieces. And if somebody's not prepared to give one really good piece, his contention is, let's hang on to the guy, because who knows, maybe we'll have a goalie injury and suddenly need him. And I see that Alain Vigneault has hinted that each of them is going to play a game this weekend, and then we'll see where we're at. So, I mean, it's a great situation to monitor. But I think that Vancouver is in a strong position, because they know that they can trade the Luongo anytime in the next 2 months and get assets back. And by then, they should have a clearer indication of what kind of a year or an impact that Kessler could potentially have. And then you know, once you know the kind of team that you've got, then you know where your holes are, then you know what you need to go out and do. So, I mean, I'd be shocked if they kept it status quo for the rest of the season. I don't think they're good enough now, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So I'm not assessing Vancouver in the big grand scheme of things, because I'm convinced that the team that they've got right now is going to be radically different when they finally get around to playing the playoffs. And I want to see what that team looks like before I say, yeah, they have a chance to win, or maybe that they don't have a chance.
Eric, we'll let you go on this last question, and I bet you could predict what the question's going to be. Earlier, you mentioned that you had the Rangers out of the East and St. Louis out of the West. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, first of all. Second of all, which one is the Stanley Cup champion?
I think I picked St. Louis. And the reason is just because they have more depth than any team in the league up front. You know, when I think that their third line right now is Andy McDonald, Alex Steen, and Vladimir Tarasenko, that's pretty good. Three power plays, two really good offensive defensemen, Peter Angelo and Shattenkirk. I mean, you know, people that listen to your show follow hockey closely enough. They know what kind of an impact these guys can make. I think, last year they had trouble in the second round. I want to see Halak get a chance to have a playoff run. You know, he had that injury. They went with Elliott. Hey, Elliott had a terrific year for them last year. But to me, the number one guy there in that two-goalie system is Halak. I remember how well he played for Montreal a couple of years back. I think he is a guy that's capable of going on a deep playoff run. And I just think that, you know, that everyone says that this, you know, injuries are going to be a factor. Well, what are the teams that are best able to recover from injuries? I think St. Louis is the one. You know, they just have more talent than any team in the league right now. They may not have a guy that scores, you know, whatever a prorated 60 points is going to be in a 48-game season. But they've got eight guys that can put the puck in the net up front, 8 out of 12. I don't think very many teams have that, the ability to do that. So I'm a great believer in hedging my bets. And if I'm a gambling man and if I'm a hedging man, I look at what St. Louis has on paper, and I just see more there than I do anywhere else. So then it's a matter of, you know, of Ken Hitchcock bringing it all together and Halak being healthy and really productive all the way through. So let's see.
Eric DeHatchick from the Globe and Mail. Eric, as always, you are our number one guest for a reason. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and enjoy the season.
All right. Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Take care, Eric.
Thanks a lot, Eric. Yeah.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment. A big thank you to Eric DeHatchick. In case you missed any of that outstanding interview, it will be available for download both on illegalcurve.com, on iTunes, and on the TSN1290.ca website. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Don't forget to get your predictions in for the Illegal Curve game-winning goal contest and the Illegal Curve 50-50 contest. You win great Illegal Curve merchandise. You can send in those your predictions on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. We finish each show each week with one final segment. This is...
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg, start it off, please.
Thank you very much. I have two big cheers today.
Okay.
The first cheer...
Just be quick.
What are you, Jodie Foster? Hurry up.
The first cheer is going to go out to Maureen Pollock, Richard's mom. Biggest fan of Illegal Curve, listens every week, and I gave a shout-out to my dad earlier, so I want to shout-out Richie's mom. But my hockey-related cheer is today. Hockey is back. We waited months and months and months for NHL hockey to come back. Today, it's going to be awesome. I know that everybody's getting really pumped up about it, so... Cheers to Game On. Cheers to the NHL being back.
Good cheer. I'll tell you what, you're now currently not invited to my parents' house ever again.
Oh, shout out to Tannis as well.
Okay, you didn't cheer my mom at the same time.
Cheer to the mums.
Richie.
I'm giving a jeer, and I want people to... We're getting ready for the hockey cliches because they're starting.
Yeah.
A jeer to players who say, like I said, but didn't say anything before they said, like I said. So if you watch all the between-period interviews, you're going to hear players say, well, like I said, but you didn't say anything before you said that. It's the new cliche in town. It's the new stick to the system, so watch for that. That's my jeer.
And I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by cheering the NHL and the NHLPA. And the reason I'm cheering them is that they sat down and they came together and they came to an agreement regarding the immediate buyouts.
Yes.
After the, you know, we saw that Scott Gomez for a little while looked like he was just going to be sent home by the Canadians, not going to be able to play this year. So kudos to both sides for coming together and coming to a reasonable agreement for both Scott Gomez and for Wade Redden and I guess Tim Connolly, but the Leafs chose not to use that one. They came to an agreement on getting some players that otherwise would be locked out of hockey for another year back into playing the game. So kudos to both of those sides. That's it for us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's amazing. 4 hours flew by just like that. A big thank you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes and on the TSN1290.ca website. Remember to follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And our website for the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim and producer Remus, and Dave Manouk on illegalcurve.com, we thank you for listening. Hustler and Lawless are next, and then Rick Ralph, and then, of course, the Jets-Senators game at puck drop at 2 o'clock. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.